to the shadows. Old stories line the shelves of our dusty archives. Stories of dreams, mystery, horror. We would like to bring one of our early radio tales back to life during this half hour. Let's see. Here's a pair of stories that lead us in opposite directions. One descends into a dark and worrisome earth. The other climbs to an equally disconcerting height and a very unusual predicament. Invented by Edgar Allan Poe. Let's hear that story first.
I have two humble but faithful companions. Diana, my poodle. And Pompey. Sweet Pompey, my negro. But Pompey is only 3 feet in height, about 70, or perhaps 80 years of age. Corpulent and bow-legged. But teeth like pearls. And eyes, oh, large fool eyes, deliciously white. Nature, alas, has endowed him with no neck. And I am the Signora Psyche Zenobia. As we walked through the deserted city, suddenly, there presented itself to view a church, a Gothic cathedral, vast, venerable, and with a tall steeple which towered into the sky, at the very top of which was a large clock looking ravenously down on us. What madness now possessed me? I was seized with an uncontrollable desire to ascend the giddy pinnacle and thence survey the immense extent of the city. The doors of the cathedral stood invitingly open, and we entered the ominous archway. Diana! Stay! Stay, Diana! Almost instinctively, Diana led us to the circular staircase, which rose up from the floor of the cathedral, up into the dark tower, like a gigantic spiral column. Diana, be careful. Come along, Pompey. You'll have to help me up the steps. Hold up your tail, and be careful not to step on my crimson satin dress. Now, come on, up we go. Here we go. Oh, Pompey, this staircase has no end. Round and up. Round and up. Round and up. Do you think it's possible that the upper end has been removed? Oh, Pompey, rest a moment. It is completely dark. I can't see anything. Pompey? It appears to me. Indeed, I am quite confident. Diana smells a rat.
Oh?
A rat? How intensely exciting. Well, round and up, Pompey. Round and...
We are here. We are at the top. Only one step remains. One step. One little step.
Upon one such little step in the great staircase of human life, how vast a sum of human happiness depends. One little step more. Ah, and thus gain access to the chamber of the Belfry. Come along, Pompey. We must find an aperture through which I may survey the city. Windows? There are none. No windows. But there is sunlight. There must be an aperture. Ha-ha! There is the aperture. Just above our heads by that machinery. A little square opening. Just a little too high for me to reach. Pompey? Pompey? How do you propose that I reach the window? Do you not propose that you stand over here, just beneath it? Over here, Pompey. So... And do you not now propose to hold out one of your hands so that I may step on it? Oh. Now the other. Brilliant, Pompey. Now, Diana, I want you to be quiet. Quiet. Sit there in the corner. That's right. Up on your hind legs. Up, up. There you go. Now I want you to remain there like a very sweet little dog. All right, Pompey. Lift me up. Come on. Up. Higher. Onto your shoulder. There. Stand still, Pompey. And now I can just push my head through the little opening. Ah, Edinburgh. The classic Edina. Spread out before me. Nothing could be more magnificent. Having in some measure satisfied my curiosity, I observed that the aperture through which I had thrust my head was an opening in the dial plate of a gigantic clock. I observed also, with surprise, the immense size of the hands of the clock, the longest of which, just above me, could not have been less than 10 feet in length. The other, pointing downward to my right, was somewhat shorter. They were of solid steel, apparently, and their edges appeared to be sharpened. Having noticed these particulars, I again turned my eyes to the glorious prospect below, becoming absorbed in timeless contemplation. Suddenly, I was startled by something very cold, which pressed with a gentle pressure on the back of my neck. What could it be? And that I but too soon discovered. Turning my head gently to one side, I perceived the huge, glittering minute hand of the clock had, in the course of its hourly revolution, had descended upon my neck. I pulled back at once. But it was too late. There was no chance of pulling my head back through that terrible trap. I threw up my hand and with all my strength tried to force upward the ponderous iron bar. But I might as well have tried to lift the cathedral itself. Down, down, down it came. The blade was already cutting into my neck. Bumpy! Bumpy, help me! Sweet Bumpy! Diana! Is there no help for the Signora Psyche Zenobia? The ponderous scythe of time. I now discovered the literal import of that classical phrase. Had already buried its sharp edge a full 2 inches into my flesh. And my sensation became indistinct. And confused. The huge figures on the clock face looked so intellectual. They were all dancing a mazurka. The figure 5 was extremely delicate in her performance, obviously a lady of breeding. I curtsied with my head to her. Exquisite pain. My eyes were absolutely starting from their sockets. One of them actually tumbled out of my head and, rolling down the side of the steeple, lodged in the rain gutter, regarding me with an insolent air of independence and contempt, winking and blinking at me, forcing my other eye to do the same, whether I wanted to or not. Shameful ingratitude. What a relief when the other eye tumbled out and rolled down to the gutter, hitting the first one. Then they rolled to the edge and disappeared. The bar was now 4.5 inches deep. My sensations were those of entire happiness. In a few instants, I would be relieved from my disagreeable predicament. At 5:25 in the afternoon precisely, the huge minute hand had proceeded sufficiently on its terrible revolution to sever the small remainder of my neck.
What a relief!
Rolled down the side of the steeple, lodged for a few seconds on the gutter, then rolled along it to the edge, and then over the side, down, down, down. No, I am the real Zenobia. There was nothing now to prevent my getting down from my elevation. And I did so. Well, Pompey! Pompey! Come back, Pompey! Look out for the stairway! Look out! Could it have been that Pompey saw so very peculiar about my appearance? Giant! Horrible vision! Is that a rat skulking in its hole? Oh, those the picked bones of the little angel cruelly devoured by the monster? What do I behold? Is that the departed spirit, the ghost of my beloved poodle? Sweet creature, she too has sacrificed herself in my behalf. Dogless, niggerless, headless,
What now remains of the unhappy Senora Psyche Zenobia? Alas, nothing, nothing. I have done.
A Predicament by Edgar Allan Poe. Pat Franklin was Signora Psyche Zenobia, with technical production by Clay Grillo. Franz Kafka takes us now in another direction.
I've completed the construction of my burrow, and it seems to be successful. From outside, you can't see anything but a hole. But that hole really doesn't lead anywhere except into solid rock. It was a little trick. A little trick. But the trick wasn't intentional. It was simply the remains of one of my many abortive building attempts. I thought it would be very clever to just leave that hole without putting it in. The real entrance to the burrow lies some thousand paces from that false hole, and it is completely hidden by a movable layer of moss. Oh, it is secured as carefully as anything in this world can be secured. Still in all, someone could step on the moss covering by accident and break through it. And then the entrance to the burrow would be revealed. And anybody intelligent enough could enter the burrow and destroy everything. Knowing that, I could never rest, not for a single hour. At that one spot in the layer of moss, I am vulnerable. All this involves very laborious calculation. And the sheer pleasure of the mind in its own keenness is often the only reason one keeps it up. You see, I must have a way of leaving the burrow at any moment. Despite all my cleverness and vigilance, I could be attacked from some place I least expect. I could be peacefully lying in the inmost chamber of my house, and all the while from below, an enemy may be burrowing his way slowly, stealthily towards me. Of course, he may not even know that I'm here. But there are insatiable robbers who burrow blindly through the ground, to whom the very size of my house gives the hope of finding something in one of its remote passages. It's true I have an advantage being in my own house and knowing all of the passages and where they lead. A robber may easily become my victim. And a succulent one, too. But I am growing old. I am not as strong as many others. They make it possible to scent things far off. And thus serve as a protection. All kinds of little creatures are attracted by the mice. And when some of them wander farther into the burrow, I... So I can have a certain amount of subterranean hunting sufficient for a modest way of life without leaving my burrow at all. And what a great advantage that is. But the most beautiful thing about my burrow is the stillness. The stillness. Of course, you never know from one moment to the next. But for the time being, the silence is still with me. I can stroll through my passages and hear nothing, nothing. And the fragrance of the woods floats in. I roar out my passage with the pure joy. When autumn sets in to possess a burrow like mine, and a roof over your head, is a great good fortune for someone getting on in years. Poor homeless wanderers in the roads and woods, creeping for warmth into a heap of leaves or a herd of comrades. Delivered to all the perils of heaven and earth. While I lie here in a room secured on every side, why, there are more than 50 such rooms in my burrow. And I pass as much of my time as I choose. Between dozing and dreamless sleep.
That was The Burrow by Franz Kafka. This brief section from the story was selected and performed by Eric Bauersfeld. Technical production by David Berry. Additional production for this program was by Jim McKee. Well, that's all for now. Come and visit our archives again. For another tale from the shadows. Real soon.